Steven, can you just introduce yourself to the podcast?
Yeah, so one, I want to say thank you for inviting me to the Talk Dirty podcast. Such a great name. it kind of feels like something after dark or something like that.
Exactly.
So my name is Steven Wilder. I am the principal architect of Think Wilder Architecture. We are a Harlem-based architecture firm. We also have office in New Jersey, partly because we do half of our work is in New Jersey, half is in New York. We're licensed to do work in other states as well, but predominantly we're in this part of the country, or in this part of the world. And so we work on all types of projects, from residential to commercial to community facilities, educational, daycare, childcare centers, and we're getting ready to start working on some urban design stuff as well. So, as a small firm, you kind of, and especially as a fresh business owner, you just take on whatever comes your way as long as it's in your wheelhouse or close to your wheelhouse. And so that's what we initially did, which is why we have so much experience in different things. We have a decent amount of construction experience, partly because of my background, just working for a developer at one point, and then also working for a small firm myself. That was pretty much how you learned. And going back to what Silas said before, is one thing to put it on the drawing, but then it's another thing to see how the contractor is actually going to build it, and how the buildings and how those lines are actually going to respond to real life conditions, and the way the sun moves, and the way existing piping is located that's not allowing you to do what you thought you were going to do. And so it's really good to get that construction experience, which we have a lot of, and it's kind of shaped who we are and somewhat who we were, because now that I'm a seasoned business owner, I kind of know the direction I want to go in now and what specific things I want to focus on.
Well, I think the trend of moving into these smaller towns is really interesting. We're working on a project in Plainfield, New Jersey. You have these towns that are popping up. One of the things I'm noticing is, the young people are going back to live with their folks, and they're kind of in these para-urban or suburban environments again. But the infrastructure that used to be there, mainly parking lots and malls and shopping lots, it seems like they're not really happening. So it seems like there is a question of like, what is this space? Silas, I see your hand. What is to come of this space? Silas, what do you have to say about that, man?
So I just want to hop in and quickly say two things. So what seems almost amazingly aligned is that Rem Koolhaas's show Countryside came right at the time when the pandemic started to hit, this reorienting the urban view to the countryside and rural outlooks. And so, since architectural theory has been focused mostly on urbanity, now it's shifted a little bit more during COVID times towards how people are moving out to the countryside. And also, what are the social, what are the political implications of this change, and how is that going to influence how spaces are designed is huge. So I think there's a huge opportunity for architects and upcoming firms like Think Wilder Architecture to figure out how to, like, in the design, create this hybridity of the urban with the countryside, so that we don't get these siloed political or design motives, whether it's architecture in the city or in the countryside, and bring people together from both outlooks. Because right now, we saw in the last election, the cities all went for one party, whereas rural areas went for another party. So it seems like there's this kind of divide, and how can spaces bring this together a little bit is an interesting topic as well.
Yeah, and
And that's a great point. But
then to kind of dive deeper into that, we also have to think about what do those people look like? Because at the end of the day, that doesn't look like Black people. like a lot of Black people do not have those options. And a lot of Black people are there in like these transient cities like New York or Chicago. And what they're doing is they're moving back to their Midwest cities that that are not as gentrified or not as developed as some of these other cities. And so they're really, it's really just jumping from, you know, the pot to the fire and not necessarily having that access to these kind of suburban, urban dividing lines. And I think I saw that. And I actually, there was something talked about that, forget the firm, but they're based in India. And when COVID first hit, obviously, because their population is so crazy out there, I forget the firm, but they were also trying to figure out, like, we have so many people and there's nowhere for them to go. So how do you deal with that? And it's, you know, New York did a great job at one point of, once it reached its peak and people got on board and the Cuomo locked everything down, you saw the numbers decrease and everybody decided to get on board and work together. And that's what happened. I think we have to kind of do that everywhere. And then when it comes to design, yes, we have to have diversity in the types of places we live, but also the locations where people live, because everybody's different. Some people are in the cities, people are in suburban areas and countryside and farmland and all these things. But what's the mix, and how do we take care of the people that really need it? We really try to focus on projects that affect large amount of people, as many people as possible, which is why we're, you know, affordable housing, we're in these different spaces where we can really make changes in large numbers of people. So yeah, but it's always about finding that balance. And it's definitely a new design challenge for anybody that's in this arena. And you know, we have to think about it on a daily basis nowadays.
So can you talk a little bit about, like, what, from your experience, what can architects and designers do to empower disenfranchised communities?
First, it's important that we identify what is a disenfranchised community, and not only what is a disenfranchised community, but actually the people in these communities understand that they're in a disenfranchised community, because a lot of times people are in these communities and they can't demand certain things because they're not aware of what other communities have, the privileges that other communities have, because a lot of times they've never left their community. They don't know the difference between a high-end grocery store, a health-based grocery store versus the corner store. Like, I know people that literally get their groceries from the corner store, and we don't even have to go into the quality of what's there. And a lot of times it's overpriced. And so that's the first thing. We need to understand, like, from a standpoint of, hey, education, sustainable living, crime, over-policing, like, all of these things are in our spectrum. They're in our world in terms of things that need to be changed and things that need to be improved for these communities. And so it's very hard to have this conversation without discussing gentrification and the players involved in gentrification, because we've kind of got to this point where, okay, if I'm doing development and I'm not from this area and I want to create these high-end units and affordable housing in there, and the city will get off my back, and the community will get off my back, and I'll have a successful project. And that's, you know, we know that doesn't solve the problem. We know that doesn't retain the character of a neighborhood. It doesn't retain the things that make the neighborhood, and one, it doesn't retain the occupants of the neighborhood. It a lot of times it's displacing people, and so we have to be a little more responsible with that. And so part of the thing we need to do is we need to, when we're doing development as architects, we need to stress to the owners that we need to engage with the people of this community. If it's an existing building and you're renovating it, then we need to talk to the people that are in this building. What do you need? What would you like to see in this new building? Because you want them to be supporters of your project. You want them to be champions of your project, because they're going to be living there, and they've been living there. They've been living in surrounding areas. So, and if you're doing a new project, a new building, then you talk to the people in the community. Like, hey, what would you like to see there? Obviously, once it gets to the point where a developer is having these conversations, we already know he's gotten all his approvals and everything, and the project is coming. like it's coming. So it's not much you can do about it. But what you can do is show that you really care, or at least that someone cares about what's being built, and that they're able to address the needs of that community. And that's one way to where you start empowering some of these people in the community, as well as sort of retaining the character of it. Because people, at the end of the day, whether Harlem was in the 80s, the 90s, 2000s, we always wanted to feel proud about where we lived. Like, to this day, no one will ever tell you that, oh, we didn't love Harlem back then, and we know what it looked like. And you can describe any major city, and no, it was not, it doesn't look like it looks now. It didn't look as great as it looks now, but it had heart, it had soul, people loved it, people got visitors. Like, the Apollo has been there for all this time, and it's been world famous forever, next to abandoned buildings, next to drugs and all of these things, but it still was like the heartbeat of a community. And so that's what we have to make sure that we're talking to people that live in these areas. And the other thing is, in showing that you care, provide them things that are of value that they didn't have before. More parks, more places to gather, more safe places to gather, more things that diverse, like make the spaces more diverse, like different things than just basketball courts. Expose them to different things that they may not have tried before, but also let them know that it's for them. Like, this is for you. This is not something that's for the people that are going to be here after you. But again, you have to have those conversations. It can't just be, we see scaffolding and sidewalk bridges going up, and then there's a building, and then, oh, we got new neighbors. It doesn't work like that.
This is really awesome. So Silas is saying, how can we develop and improve spaces without losing the soul of Harlem? I mean, this is something, to be honest with you, Stephen, I have thought about a lot. As you know, Plant Group, we're in the business of mostly of beautification, you know, and this mixed bag, this mixed bag of, hey man, we feel great, we just did this beautiful thing, and the old ladies in the neighborhood are happy, and the kids are happy, and then all of a sudden the property value starts going up, and now it's like, holy shit, what did we just do?
You did it. You what did it, Austin.
So we need to figure this out, right? Because it's like, so, people deserve beauty too, right?
Yeah, no, and think about it. What do I do? That's you. We do the same thing. But take, for instance, and a couple points to respond to that. They have these new things where they're called building energy efficiency ratings. And so as I've been walking around Harlem, I've been seeing these things posted, like the restaurant grades on the front, on the entrance of buildings. And so some buildings have, I haven't seen any A ratings yet, but I've seen C ratings and B ratings and D, I don't know if it's D, but I've seen worse than C. I can't remember what it was. But a lot of these buildings that have these ratings, these are those buildings that were first built when the land was super cheap in early 2000s. And so you have these old buildings that have been here for 80 years, and they're receiving higher ratings than these new buildings. So that's one thing. Like, don't give us, or don't give these communities, just this cookie cutter garbage and bang out some nice interiors so you can get, because that's all people really care about. What does the kitchen look like? How big are the apartments? And you can give them crap on the outside, and in New York, people will take it. Like, that's just how it works. Give us something that's going to beautify the neighborhood at least. That's the least thing you could do. But then the other thing is that I was thinking, like, we have affordable housing, but when these buildings are built and they have commercial spaces, we don't have affordable commercial spaces. So part of keeping that sold is keeping the businesses, like Lenox Lounge. It wasn't landmarked, and so they didn't have those rights and that support to keep that space. But and so guess what happens? Lenox Lounge is gone. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all to me. It makes no sense under any circumstance. Like, that's something that people of the community should have protected. And not even people of the community, people outside the community, the millions of people that have come into that place. And so if you create something like where you build a building and you have to have a percentage of your commercial space is dedicated to people of the community that have been here, or people that have had businesses already here, that's one way. Because at least that way, that mom and pop bookstore gets to stay there because of one, we can think about the cultural value of the materials that are being sold in that library. And when they have to leave, they have to become online or something like that. Now they have to compete with the Amazons and all these other places, which is very difficult to do. Like, the soul of any neighborhood are going to be its small businesses, the people that are Absolutely. Able to create something and stay in their neighborhoods and provide services to the people that they know need it, who don't want to go anywhere else. So that's part of it.
Yes. I love this idea of small business and the role of designers and planners and architects and thinking about small businesses. And I think that we need to start talking about the role of green jobs, because I still believe that the green economy, if we can do this right, that is the answer to how can we have good jobs for working families. So maybe part of thinking about, you know, the question of gentrification and how do we counteract that in Harlem is we really need to start thinking about job creation and working with like policymakers around that.
Yeah, I totally agree. But green jobs, your suggestion is it gives light to a bigger issue. It's really about creating opportunities, but also being responsible enough to create the right opportunities. And so with green jobs, like with what you do, part of what you do is educating people on your importance. Like, people in your community, you don't have to tell anything, but you know you can't sustain a business with just the people in your network. You have to go beyond that and educate people on what you do and what's the value of it. And that's part of the reason why sustainability and green design and green living as a whole has not taken off the way it's supposed to, because the education is not there and people do not believe it. It's just like COVID. People are dying right in front of us and people still don't believe it. Like, people still don't believe it. People still don't believe healthy living, healthy indoor air environments. Like, all of this stuff is crucial. Carbon emissions, like, all of these things are crucial. And we have to, I hate using scare tactics, but we have to figure out how to educate people, because that's where your value comes from. And that's where people will decide to, hey, there's green jobs available. I want to do those green jobs. Like, that's something I want to do, because technically they're here, because we're in a space now where you only have so many limitations. Like, going to college no longer is a limitation. You can educate yourself, however, start a business and provide a service to people that are in need. But at the end of the day, whether it's 1920 or 2020, businesses have to provide something that satisfies a need. And so the need is there. We just got to kind of just do it. You kind of just have to do it. And sometimes you have to start small and you just build your own community of people and each one teach one. Like, I hate using old slogans, but that's what it has to be. Like, we all have to get on board, but it has to be something that just happens naturally. And I don't know who or when the policy starts to change. People still don't believe in climate change. like people still, like, we're about to get our first snow of the year today. And I don't even know if it snowed last year. Imagine New York with a winter with no snow. So, you know, and that's right in front of us. We can see that, and people still don't understand what that means. How to, like, what's the global impact of that?
I agree that, like, you know, we just need to start. And I think it starts with business, and it starts with entrepreneurship, and policy follows. And I think one of the ideas I like to think about is, where are there opportunities that are created by imperfect situations? So you were talking about all these crappy buildings with the energy, you know, getting these really poor energy building energy ratings. Can we use that as incentive to focus on those buildings for the green roofs?
Well, it's funny you say that, because there is there are new local laws that are requiring people to install solar panels and or green roofs. Like, even some of the towns that I work in Plainfield, they're requiring Plainfield, but communities in New Jersey, they're requiring that you have green roofs or solar panels. Sometimes it's either or. And so if we're forcing, it's not about forcing architects. At the end of the day, architects are good by nature. Like, we are good people. We are here to affect positive change. That's how we start off. But now, when we're dealing with whoever hires us, we're dealing with finances and capitalism and budgets and real life things. And real life things lead to real life decisions. And sometimes we go back to talking about engaging with the community, engaging with residents. How many people, before they build a building, are engaging with residents and finding out what they really need? And I'm sure if you do this on every time you have a project, they're going to tell you, hey, we need this. My child can't breathe. My child has this condition. We're already located close to factories and warehouses and things like that have been here for decades that already make it tough for us. Let's not add to that problem. And so we need green solutions to help eradicate some of these issues that have already been there for ages. And doing these green roofs and solar panels, they're forcing people. And now, like in New York, they also have where you have an energy efficient review. Like, your projects get reviewed, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, and structural, but it's also what energy and sustainable practices you're applying to the building, which helps. It's gonna take a while before we get there, because these are things that we should naturally be doing, especially as architects, we're the gatekeepers to these things, and we have to push back a little bit. And we have to make sure that if we tell a developer or a client something, they're not going to leave us and go to the next architect who's not going to care about it. So we got to hold people to the fire and keep everybody accountable. Everybody got to do their part.
Where do you see the role of, like, say, certification programs, things like LEED or even WELL AP and some of these newer programs focused on wellness? Do you see that playing a role in this? And is that something your firm is going to invest more in? Or?
Yeah, so we one of the things that COVID did for me was it got me back focused on these certifications. And a lot of times these certifications are just certifications and people are not necessarily practicing these things, but they just have it because it makes them more attractive. And there are some people that do have these certifications and are doing things in these fields. And then there's people who don't have these certifications and they are doing things in these fields. So certifications are what they are. Again, I'm always kind of hesitant on them because they're money driven. And so if somebody tells me, hey, this is a requirement, is it a free requirement? Like, because people are benefiting from these things, but they're not necessarily making sure that they're being implied to these installed on these projects or integrated into what we actually have to do. Because all this education is shit if we don't use it. Like, what's the point? Like I said, they're beautiful. I see LEED AP, LEED GA. I was studying LEED in 2002. I didn't have money to go get the certification, so I never got certified. But I've always had it in my head. As an architect, I've always practiced passive design. I've always tried to convince clients, this is what we need to put in the building. And so going back to what I said before, COVID has made me, as a business owner, I'm like, hey, I got my own business. I can do what the fuck I want. let's make sure all of our projects have these things. And so now the team that we have, we're focused on getting these certifications because we want people to believe it and we want them to see it. We want clients, before they even come to us, to know that this is what we're about. We're going to pressure you to do these things before you even come to us. And so if that's not what you want, then we don't necessarily want to work with you. And it's perfectly fine, but this is the type of work that we want to do. We just don't want to do projects just to do them. And so, yes, we will have all the certifications. Gotcha. We will have every certification you're supposed to have for the purpose of having the certification.
Right. No, and I totally understand, like, you guys are actual architects and there is a lot of hype with these certifications, but I do think it helps kind of just in a succinct way, like you say, this is what we're about. Silas, please jump in. I know you have something.
I just think that, like you said, what you said before about how some people who don't have the certifications are practicing the practices of the certification just as well, that is a huge point. Like, some people who have it in their heart to do these practices properly, but they don't have the capital to get that certification like you did when you were younger, like, that is despicable. So a way, how can we rectify this issue, these barriers to entry, to get that legitimacy that you're actually practicing the right method?
Totally.
So I was thinking, like, maybe we get in a legalistic type of way, say we are aiming to achieve these certification levels, even if you don't have that certification yet, eventually we can get there, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because I never even thought about it from that standpoint. Like, how do we deal with all of these things that make it tough to get these certifications? But one thing I will say about them is, I've met people who are not in the design industry, not in architecture, not in the sustainable community, and they have certifications. Like, they work for a developer in some kind of role, and it's like, it's really cool because you're having this, you're like, wait a minute, because before when you saw LEED, you automatically thought architect. And now you see it, and it's like, man, I have a friend who went to school for communications, ended up being a property manager, commercial property manager, and was LEED certified. Like, and I was like, I've missed something over the last 8 years. When did this happen?
Yeah.
So that's where we're at.
Yeah, you were the first business person I ever met who told me that you were, like, actively trying to divest your, like, well, just focus on clients that have this mission and projects that have this sustainable mission. Like, I hadn't really heard anybody else say that to me before. So that had an impact on me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool because sometimes you don't realize where you're at in terms of, like, what power do you have? What influence do you have? And I started to realize, like, hey, I may have a little bit of influence. I have clients that actually listen to me and when I decide to sell them on an idea, I don't talk much, but when I do, I try to make sure I get my money's worth. And so some of them have been really receptive, and obviously we're working together. I got you on a couple of projects because people have been receptive to what to this movement that I'm trying to do with my own company, which I think if we didn't make this or start making this transition And in 5 years, we probably wouldn't be able to be in business. And I don't know if I would want to be in business if we're not doing this type of stuff in 5 years. And so this is only the beginning, and I'm looking forward to like the challenges that are waiting for me, and all the fun and success we're going to have, and the projects and all the fun things we're going to do.
Yeah.
And like even these projects that you're working on, that you guys are working on, these things, you know, they're going to have real impact as soon as what we're doing is done, like immediately, like in this affordable housing project. Those people they've benefited already. The project's not complete yet. Like they've benefited from us coming in there and helping out with redesigning some places and providing this urban farm we're gonna do. Like they're gonna benefit immediately. The kids at the childcare center that we're providing urban farm for, they've been waiting for this.
Cool. I was saying maybe you could talk a little bit about your work with Patrick and just kind of how you're branching out into also like development. I mean, it's moving beyond architecture in a way, right?
So development has always been something of an interest of mine. I really have respect for developers that are doing it with actual intention. Like they're not just everybody's. I'm not ever going to knock anybody for trying to make money, but like I said before, you can do multiple things at the same time and still achieve a certain outcome. And Patrick is one of those people. He's very conscious of what he's building and who he's building it for and where it's being located and how it's going to change a neighborhood. And that's the type of work that I want to do and I've always wanted to do. And so when you start with that ideology, you go on to, wait a minute, we're leaving stones unturned. Like there's missed opportunities if we're just creating a building and then walking away. So what other types of things can we create for a project? And that's when we get into, hey, how do we, like, what does this community need? What are the problems of this area? Even though we're doing just a lot, maybe it's 20,000 square feet or it's half an acre or whether it's 5 acres in a larger city, that thing can be a catalyst for change. And that's how we have to look at it. And so with every project, we're trying to address as many issues as possible. So if the town is a food desert, then hey, we're gonna do something to kind of eradicate that issue. If there's education needs, then hey, we may say, all right, this area needs a community center, this area needs a park, or this area needs a residential building with its own co-working space. Or trying to create buildings that are more than just the purpose they serve and serve other purposes that can also help. And so to being an architect, you don't necessarily have the ability to do those things. So you have to get in on development because you want to have a voice in the room. You want to be able to really affect change, not by just talking about it, but also being able to do it. And a lot of times developers or being a developer is the only way you can do that.
That was Stephen Wilder from Think Wilder Architecture. Check them out online and on Instagram. Tune in next month for the next episode of Talk Dirty.